Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi everyone, it's obvious. I'm John Verhoeven, and I was a cop back in the 80s in Sydney.
And I'm Paul Verhoeven, John's son. I'm an author, and I wrote two books about Dad's time as a cop.
The first five seasons of Loose Unit spanned my time in general duties, forensics, my time as a firefighter, and even my stint running a funeral home.
This season, we're visiting the locations of Australia's most notorious, baffling, horrific crimes, and looking at what happened there.
From Snowtown to The Family, from the Morehouse murders to haunted highways, this season of Loose Units is your go-to guide to the worst crimes in Australian true crime history.
Welcome to Loose Units, The Shadow Files.
Hello and welcome to Loose Units, The Shadow Files. Listeners, we are now continuing our ongoing look at Dennis Rader, aka the BTK killer. Now, Dad, something's occurred to me because throughout this series, we have been looking at a bunch of Rader's testimony at trial. And for me, I've been reading the transcripts and looking at some photos and have been frankly disturbed by the kind of coldness of this guy, the practicality of the way he talks. And I was very curious, you have interviewed countless people, you've also interviewed people on the witness stand before, so I want to know what your impressions are. First of all, how much can you get from reading a transcript?
Not a lot, I don't think. You need to see the person.
Right, and have you seen any footage of him yet, or just
lots.
The transcripts?
Maybe 6 or 7 hours.
Oh, God, okay.
I've sort of immersed myself in this particular case. More so, I think, than any other case we've ever done.
All right, I've been looking back on photos of Dennis Rader throughout the years. And he looks... here's the problem, folks. When you look back at photos of somebody who's committed a crime or committed murders, it's very easy to project what you know about the person onto their appearance and sort of conflate the two, right? So you can see glasses and go, what's sinister glasses? You can see a mouth and go, oh, it's a hard, cruel, whatever. But looking back on Dennis Rader's face, at no point, glasses or no, did I think he looked like an okay dude? And again, maybe I'm projecting.
Well, I've seen him mainly... I mean, his mugshots are more sort of connected to one's emotions in terms of, you know... See, there lies the problem, listeners. When one knows what one has done,
yeah,
then one sees the face. It's a little bit like the famous Lindy Chamberlain case. The media and the public all had an opinion, you know, that she was the daughter of the devil simply because she showed no emotion. We don't really know what goes on inside, you know, people in their minds. But the general impression that I get, bearing in mind criminals do tend to dress nicely when they're in court.
That's something that their lawyers would tell them to do, right? To curry favour with the jury, I assume.
You don't want us to come in looking like a dog's breakfast. But if you've got a sort of a gangster type like Al Capone, who doesn't wear glasses, and then you put on some horn-rimmed spectacles, I have a feeling that that does affect one's view of the person. But I do know, and I've listened to a lot of interviews by psychiatrists and psychologists who have actually been face-to-face with him. And he absolutely shows no remorse. And he's very matter-of-fact.
Right.
but in a fairly gentle way. He recalls facts. He's very, very polite, which can be sort of beguiling. And that's one of the things that he used. He would lull his intended victims mm-hmm. into a definite sense of false security. He would create, he would fabricate, as we know from previous cases, the ruse that he simply was an escapee. He needed food, car keys, maybe a bit of cash, and he'd be out of there. So he'd, by saying these things, he would lull the people, the occupants of the place that he'd broken into a sense of, well, hang on, maybe things are not... I don't know whether people could ever have imagined their fate. Which brings us, Paul...
Well, it brings us to September 1986, right? Because our last victim was in 1985. So in September 1986, we're dealing with our next victim, Vicky Wigerle, who was a 28-year-old. It's the year after our last murder. Dad, what struck me when I was looking at Vicky, apart from the fact that she looks absolutely lovely and extremely happy, was the fact that she was a mum. She was a young mum. She had two kids at the time. Could you walk us through, because we now know that the BTK killer stalks his prey and does lots of reconnaissance and, you know, puts himself into their lives in some way. So I'm very curious as to how he began to stalk her and pick her as a victim.
Paul, Vicky was an accomplished pianist. One might ask, did that ultimately lead to her death?
Really?
Yeah, because he would walk past her place.
Right.
His first contact with her was listening to her play the piano. That's the first encounter. And it charmed him. Now, we know that he always wanted to get to know his intended victims, whether it be going to the coffee shop to have the victim serve him coffee at the hospital with one of our previous victims, or going to their place of work and simply eyeballing them, getting involved in fairly superficial conversation, or whether it was walking past their house when they were doing the gardening and even being on first-name basis. We know that he did murder one particular woman who lived only six doors away. So he looks for something that triggers something in him. Then he's aroused. He is curious. So he then begins to basically stalk, focus, home in. He's very, very single-minded with his pursuit. Once he locks on to a target, it's like a hunter. Everything else becomes sort of out of focus.
Yeah.
His entire sort of, I guess, awakening moments are preparing that terrible day. And in this particular case, what I'd like to say about Vicky is that her husband, Bill, they met in high school and they were both 16. They were married at 17.
Okay.
And at 18, they had a daughter. Now, on this fateful day, Dennis Rader, the offender, he had a hard hat, a yellow hard hat. He had overalls. He was carrying a large folder, which was an official document.
Yeah, I was going to ask. So, typically speaking, Dennis has worn many, many different hats. He has a bunch of professions he can use to essentially... He basically has disguises he can use to play the part of somebody who is trusted enough to enter the house of a victim. So you've mentioned hard hat, clipboard, whatnot. What under what guise did he enter her house? What did he say he was doing? And was he there on legitimate business, potentially?
Well, what he did, before he goes into the house, he cuts the phone line. He then goes, again, he's so methodical and so... I believe, and I've not been able to find any information on this particular aspect that I'm about to mention, but I imagine that he had a very high IQ.
Right.
A very high, because he's methodical, he's attention to detail. He doesn't go to Vicky's place under the guise of being a telephone repairman. He goes to a neighbour's house first and goes through the whole spiel with no intention of committing a crime at the first house. What it is, it's setting up in his mind, and possibly to the minds of other people that may see him, is that it's part of the job. If you're going to kill someone, how amazing and prudent would it be to go to other people's houses first with no intention? By the time you get to the victim's house, if there's anyone watching you, as far as they're concerned, you're a telephone repairman, and this is just another place you're entering. So when he goes in, knocks on the door, the young girl, the mother, who's now in her 20s, she's also got a second child, a boy who's 2, the husband is at work. Dennis says to her, and believe you me, he looks the part, he even carries a fake telephone instrument that looks as though it's something to the uninitiated, as some sort of device, like those red telephones that we've mentioned in the case of the witch, Paul, where Julian and I sat.
It looks like the kind of thing that an official would use to solve the problem that he's caused. He is effectively going, hey, I'm just here to fix the thing that you're clearly experiencing. But ironically, Dad, phone lines cutting out is what authorities had warned people to check for when they remember that the previous year, authorities had basically said, hey, please, when you get home, check to see that you've got a dial tone, because this guy cuts your phone lines.
Okay, so imagine this girl, this young mother. The guy says to her that I'm here to check your phone line.
Yep.
What would she then do? She goes to her phone.
Checks
it, and it's dead.
Yep, and goes, oh, okay, well, seems legit. Bang, he's in, I assume. Right, okay. So, Dad, backing up what we said, Dennis actually in the court transcript mentions that he used, and I quote, I used a ruse as a telephone repairman to get into her house. I drove there in my own personal car around lunchtime, having lunch an hour or approximately that time. It was earlier in the morning then. And I actually went somewhere else and changed my clothes into what I call my hit clothes. And then the judge asks for clarification, and Raider says hit clothes, basically different, you know, things I need to get rid of later. Not the same kind of clothes I had on. I don't know a better word to use. Crime clothes or hit clothes. I just call them hit clothes. Anyway, I walked from my car as a telephone repairman. As I walked there, I donned my telephone helmet. I had a briefcase. Went to one other address to kind of size up the house. Now, I wanted to just dwell on a few points here. First of all, the fact that he has terminology he uses to describe the, you know, the costuming, for lack of a better term. The fact that he has a real system. The whole hit clothes thing suggests, I mean, if you ever wanted premeditation, that's it. But what fascinates me, and as to your point that he's quite intelligent, was the fact that he went to an adjacent house in case she looks out and sees him.
Yeah.
If you see a telephone repairman at an adjacent house going to that house and then coming to yours, it just adds to the illusion.
Agree.
You know?
Brilliant.
And then he says, as I approached, I could hear a piano sound. I went to this other door. Now, what he's saying in the statement is that he'd chosen her already.
Hmm.
And the piano sound wasn't the reason he was there, but it definitely factored in. I went to this other door, knocked on it, and told them that we were recently working on telephone repairs in the area, and then went to her and knocked on the door and asked if I could check her telephone lines inside. Now, this means that that the neighbors of Vicky interacted with the man who killed their neighbor.
Yep.
That's terrifying. And then one more thing I want to add to this just sort of ball is the fact that he says he went over and found out where the telephone was, simulated that I was checking the telephone. I had a make-believe instrument, and after she was looking away, I drew a pistol and asked her if she would go back to the bedroom with me. So he's done several things. He's mentioned these things in the court transcript that really do paint a picture of somebody not just wearing a uniform barging in, but trying to build an illusion that ensures his success, right?
Mm. Yeah. Well, he's a professional. It's his job.
Mm.
Yes, he has another job, but this is his main job. And how does he get paid for this particular job, this line of work? He gets paid with sexual gratification. It's been going on for so long now. And he's fastidious. And when I've seen him being the video of him in court giving evidence, sometimes he closes his eyes. It's quite interesting. The judge asks him a question. He closes his eyes to recount in minute detail. He can remember the addresses. He will say something like, yes, it was 62 such and such. Now let me think about this. It was 63. And the judge will say, was it on the north or southern side of the street? And he will recall what he's doing. He's very, very well practiced in closing his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And reliving experiences. And that has to be one of his key attributes. That is what enables him to continually, over and over again, fantasize about his crimes. Listeners, he's still alive today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You could bet your bottom dollar that as we're recording our podcast, if he's awake or asleep, whatever, there are days, probably hours in the days, that he is continually reliving. And if you've got routines, it's like skydiving. When you practice and practice about using your reserve, when it comes to the actual experience where you have some terrible malfunction, you don't have time to dwell. You just go into this state. And for him, he's a professional. He's a killer. I mean, there's some talk as to how many people, which we'll talk about later. He's adamant that it was 10. I am convinced, for reasons that will become apparent in a later podcast, that it was more than that. This particular girl, Vicky, imagine you're a mother, your husband's at work.
Yeah.
A guy's pulled a gun. You're on the bed. He's tied your ankles up. You fight, and Vicky managed to say to Dennis, "My husband is coming home for lunch." Right. And for some weird reason, Dennis actually, on this occasion, because people in the past had said lots and lots of things about people are coming home, you know, but on this particular occasion, he believed it. And he strangled her and he thought, being the operative word, that he had killed her. He left her lying there. He then got some of her clothes, positioned them on the floor. Yeah. He took photographs of the clothing. He went through her personal possessions. Dennis leaves Vicky in a state that he believes she's deceased.
Mm-hmm.
He's done what he had to do.
Yep.
Then...
Oh, he also takes photos of the dying... Yep.
That's for his, you know, for his trophy kit.
Right. So he I think he poses the body a few times, but then he heads to Vicky's car and he leaves yep. in Vicky's car.
Correct. And he drives down the street. Yep. And what do you think happens several minutes later as he's driving their car, her car, down the street?
Mm-hmm.
Vicky's husband was coming back for lunch.
And sees
Dennis driving his wife's car.
So it's not like he clocks the car and goes, oh, there she goes. He sees a man correct. Driving. Oh, fuck.
He actually sees this person
right.
driving his wife's car.
Okay.
He goes home, approaches the front door,
yeah.
goes inside. The first thing he sees is the two-year-old son sitting on the floor in the middle of the lounge room
right.
by himself. He then goes. He obviously would have clocked as he sort of approached the family home that the car was not there.
Yeah.
Imagine going inside and seeing your two-year-old sitting on the lounge room floor. You can just shudder to imagine what happens next. He goes into their bedroom, and there, lying with a tourniquet around her neck, bound at the feet, is his wife. He thinks that she's deceased, but guess what, Paul? She's not.
Oh.
She's not dead. He calls the paramedics, and she was still alive. And they kept her alive during the process of them working on her.
Right, okay.
Conveying her to hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not until several hours later that she passed away. And as if that's not bad enough, and I think one of the really sad aspects of this particular case is that the husband, Bill, for 18 years was regarded by people of the town and various police as the prime suspect. He suffered with his children. Yeah. Some of his daughter, because I've read a lot about this, suffered so badly at school, and certain teachers actually said to the daughter as she was going through high school what a bad person she was, and people were not to associate with her. Her and her father were regarded as scum.
Oh, no.
What a shocking indictment. But, hey, it happens. People just... Oh, look, it makes my blood boil. Yeah, that's why horrible. With our podcast, Paul, we really try to maintain that level of fairness. Yes, we have opinions, but it's always important to wait until all the facts. And yes, we can look at things with hindsight. Yes, we do talk about current crimes in our podcasts. We're talking about the terrible situation down in Ballarat, which is a total mystery. But, you know, and I make mistakes too. I mean, but this poor family had to endure from many, many sort of sides within their community. They were pariahs. And like I said, 18 years.
Yeah.
Which we'll cover later.
Speaking of big gulfs of time, I think what I'd read from a few different news sources was that because the BTK killer until the previous victim hadn't been active for 8 years, right, he'd basically disappeared. The police were reluctant, apparently, to classify the murder as a BTK killing.
Hmm.
And that's part of what deflected suspicion onto the husband. Now, obviously, that's fucking horrifying. But what strikes me as odd is that there was actually another murder that occurred in 1987. So what I'm curious about is, when that happened, did the public not, and did the authorities not go, shit, sorry, we had the wrong person? Was the husband ever formally sort of, like, did the authorities ever come out and go, hey, sorry, we clearly had it wrong with Bill?
18 years later.
Right, 18 years. Okay, correct. That seems like cold comfort, honestly.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
It's a long time if you know that you didn't murder your wife and pretty well everyone else thinks you did. Yeah, it's a tough one, Paul. Trial by media, trial by public opinion.
Mm.
Every news story that happens every night on every television, people have got their opinions and they differ. They're vastly, there's a complete array of opinions. And it's frustrating. But again, you know, we like to present, we try and present the facts and we do give opinions. But, you know, I'm giving an opinion based on my experience in law enforcement.
Yeah.
And police get it wrong too. There have been some classic cases. There are some really, really famous cases where the police have absolutely got it wrong, because one particular senior officer says, well, this is what I think and this is what we're going to do and I'm not going to listen to any other opinions.
Mm.
And history proves, of course, well, conversely, that police officer, the senior officer, he could be correct as well. In that case, nothing's ever said about it. But that's the thing about policing. You need to be very open,
yeah,
and sort of be aware that there are so many things that can happen. Christine and I last night watched a true crime documentary. Sounds weird, listeners, saying to you out there that we listen to and watch true crime. It's just so, I don't understand why Christine and I sort of, it's
not subject yourselves to that. Yeah,
it's weird. But we watched this particular crime. It's on Netflix, and it's about I'm not going to tell you what happens, but I will say that Christine and I stopped the film, the entire sort of, it's a documentary,
right?
In one episode, or, you know, it's sort of an hour and a half. We stopped the watching 5 minutes from the end. We just turned it off because we both looked at each other and we kind of wish we'd looked at each other a lot earlier on.
Right.
Because we both knew what was going to happen and it was anticlimactic. But then I started to think, hang on a sec, maybe that's because of our police background, where we were underwhelmed.
Right.
And it's sort of, that can be a bit frustrating, watching stuff and then going, hang on a sec, I really do feel as though we don't need to keep watching because we know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Hey, I've just found something, by the way. I just got a little alert here. Several living victims of the BTK killer, of Dennis Rader, have actually tried to sue him. Mm-hmm. Now, I can't find any information in this moment for the life of me as to whether those lawsuits yielded results. But Kevin Bright, if you recall, yep, who was the... Right? So Kevin Bright from a couple of episodes ago, he filed a $75,000 damages suit, including medical expenses, lost income, pain, suffering, disability, disfigurement, and mental anguish. There have been four lawsuits filed as of the date of this article against the BTK killer, one of whom is the Wigerl family. So right. Bill Wigerl was, he's one of the people, the reason I bring it up is because he's one of the people who has sued Dennis Rader. Now, I don't know where those lawsuits went. This is information I've literally just found as we are recording, but I find it... No, I hope that those cases get cleared the way they should. I really hope these people get some compensation.
Another interesting fact, Paul, is that there were three people, three women, that contacted the police about this offender that we never ever hear about. And they said that they were being stalked. they actually issued restraining orders, which can only be issued through a court, against Dennis Rader. These are three women that clearly were never murdered. The third woman that issued a restraining order against Dennis Rader actually left the town for good. She was so traumatized by him. What I'd like to do sometime is ascertain when these things, they were probably happening over the duration of the time he was killing people. But if you issue a restraining order through a court to say that this particular person is harassing you, that doesn't necessarily, from a police perspective, tie in to the fact that he would be a suspect, because really, these were cold cases.
Yeah.
They had no leads. They had all the semen in the world, because he used to deposit, sperm at every single crime, but they had no one to link it to. They had a lot of physical evidence. They had evidence underneath the fingernails of some of these victims. I mention the fingernails because in a later episode we're actually going to discuss how important DNA that was found underneath one of the victim's fingernails becomes one of the most crucial and damning pieces of evidence. Absolutely fascinating.
Right. Well, there's more victims, unfortunately. So we're going to deal with them. Actually, oh God, the next one's really bad. They're all really bad, but we are nearing, I think, the end of his run as a killer and about to enter something a little more, punitive. Yeah. We know he gets caught, but the how is the interesting part for me.
Fascinating.
So thank you for listening to another installment of our look at Dennis Rader, also known as the BTK killer. Right now, as we speak, I am over in America and Dad and I are doing this show remotely. But we hope you're having a great time. We hope you're staying safe. And we will see you very, very soon for more Loose Units. Bye, folks.
Cheerio.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.